Feral Audio.
Jimmy Crane's a nerd. Jimmy Crane's an improv nerd. Jimmy Crane's a nerd.
Hey everybody, this is Jimmy Crane, and you're listening to a very special episode of Improv Nerd. This is our year in review, where we pick our favorite episodes of 2017. And joining us is the producer of Improv Nerd, Dan Schiffmacher. Dan, welcome to Improv Nerd.
Thank you. Good to be here for a third year in a row.
Great. Could you sound a little more excited?
Great to be here a third year in a row,
that's
Jimmy.
That's what we like to hear.
All right.
And also joining us is Sam Bowers, the director of Improv Nerd.
I am very thrilled to be here. Also want to make sure that it's known, my directing hat never comes off. And for all you listeners out there who caught it as well, Jimmy said we were reviewing our favorite episodes of 2017. So
Ooh. There
are little Easter eggs like that.
There are no mistakes. There's no mistakes. We have to.
Yes, and
What did I?
You said we will be reviewing our favorite episodes of 2017.
Oh man, that episode with Bill Murray was the best.
Yeah.
All right. Should we take it over?
I think we should just go with it. I think that's part of the fun.
As I said, listeners, there are Easter eggs like that hidden throughout the series.
Well, as you would guess, I'm already filled with shame before we even start.
Thanks to
Richter.
But
it isn't an episode of Improv Nerd if I'm not feeling some sort of shame.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, that's...
Your improv wisdom will agree. Something weird happened, and I acknowledged it, and now we're playing with it.
Right, but now mm-hmm. I'm struggling with my perfectionism, wanting to go back and recording it, making it all okay. But we're not going to do that.
Right.
We're not going to... Yes, Dan?
That wouldn't be you, you know? That would be the...
That wouldn't be improv.
That's right. the...
That would be scripted.
Right.
Okay, we're going to start with you. And I just want to say before we go, there isn't two people... Who would know the best episodes than you guys, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because Dan, you produce and you edit all the episodes, so you've heard them all. Is that right?
Yeah. Well, I haven't listened to all of them. Yes, I'm going to say yes because I've listened to most of them and edited through most of them, so I know, which ones are really good. And I've listened to almost every one of your intros, so you know.
And Sam, you have been on all the live shows. A lot of the ones where we just go to someone's hotel room because they're on a press junket. So you've listened to most of the episodes.
I have been to Jane Lynch's hotel room. Yes, that is clear. I have sat across a table from Simon Helberg at an Embassy Suites. Or I think he stayed at a much nicer hotel.
No, he did. He stayed like at the Peninsula or something.
Yeah.
I mean, you're acting like you were in the same room as Adam McKay or something.
Which Dan was. All right, so can we move
on? But like, you know all of these people, so out of all of us here.
My favorite episode of 2016.
Okay, we're going to start with Dan.
Okay.
And your first pick of 2016 was Mike Birbiglia.
Yeah, my favorite episode of 2018 was Mike Birbiglia. And I just, getting to meet him and just hearing what he has to say about comedy and just how he approaches filmmaking and stuff in general. Was why I picked him, because I really love what he had to say.
And the interesting thing is, you had seen the movie Don't Think Twice,
yeah,
with a group of improvisers.
Yeah.
And what was your reaction when you went and saw it?
So it was, because we went to the night before the interview, and it was really interesting to see everybody's reaction, because all of the people that I know and are friends, when the lights went up, everybody was like, oh my God, that was so... Because I thought the movie perfectly represented... how the improv scene is, you know.
So when the movie ended,
everybody was kind of like, well, you know, they were really kind of taken aback, but like they were really kind of like, you know, thinking of themselves and how they represent in that world. It didn't affect me quite as much because I've SNL and that is not my dream.
For people that didn't see the movie, it was really about an improv group. And where one member gets to be on an SNL style show, which was Weekend Live.
Right. And dealing with fame and kind of trying to get past, because like you're in this improv world of playing all the time. You just want that to never end. But then things happen and people move on and grow up. And that's kind of what the theme was. And a lot of people in that theater were like, okay, we gotta really, look at our lives here and do something.
Now, when I interviewed him, I talked about me crying a couple times because I had very similar experiences turning down an audition to Saturday Night Live, seeing other people become famous and me still doing a podcast. Yeah. What was your emotional reaction to the movie?
I kind of had a little bit of that reaction, but it also kind of affirmed the kind of choice I made not to focus as much on acting and improv and do more production stuff.
More film and video.
Yeah, And so, like, I felt a little bit satisfied with myself because I just was like, at the time, at the time of this recording, I haven't improvised in like a year or so, other than like the podcasts that I do, you know, that's improvising, but I haven't been on stage doing any of that. And not that anything's wrong with it, it just, that dream isn't,
so it
it's a tough dream.
It reaffirmed you made the right decision.
Right. Well, also because like, I know people who are trying to get acting and it's, you got to really grind at it. And I don't have that kind of, I have that, but not for acting. So it's not a good choice for me.
So tell us about the clip you're about to share.
Let's see. There's two short clips, we'll play. One is kind of like where he talks about, how he thought about the film and how he wanted to tell his story visually through, using with the chairs on the stage, like one goes away and one goes, so like he wanted to approach that and tell the story through that. And I think especially now there are a lot of comedies that are just too focused on the script and like the banter or whatever and not enough on the visual story.
So let's hear that clip now.
Okay.
My wife is the source of inspiration of many things in my life, and she made this observation one night after one of my shows at UCB, where I think it was A.D. Bryant and Ellie Kemper and a handful of other improvisers. And she goes, everyone's so equally talented and funny, but yet this person's a movie star and this person's on SNL and this person lives on an air mattress in Queens. And I just thought, man, that's a movie. Like that idea felt visual to me. Like I saw a Big Chill style film, like a Big Chill style comedy set in the world of an improv theater. And actually, one of the first images I wrote down, because after Sleepwalk With Me, I wanted to write my films in pictures. You know, I wanted to make sure that the visual metaphor preceded the dialogue. And I wrote down this idea of six chairs of an improv group, and then there's five, and then there's four, and then eventually the group is almost dissolved.
And your second clip was?
The second one, where he was talking about comedy in drama and how they can mix, because that's just how real life is. And that's something that I've always had this idea for a film that would start off as like a slapstick kind of comedy, but then all of a sudden, like someone dies, and then like you have that person has to deal with that for, you know, so like, because that's what happens in life. You know, it's not a mixture of both. So I love it when he talks about, you know, having to have both in each thing.
And here's that clip now. You're not afraid if you're not getting laughs. You have patience with that.
Yeah.
You're happy sometimes if people leave in a little sad, much like the end of your film.
Sure. I like sad. Yeah. No, I always say, I with movies, I like my dramas to have comedy. I like my comedies to have drama. I don't, when I watch a drama that has no laughter in it, I just go, but what? That's not realistic. I mean, one of my favorite movies is Life is Beautiful, because it's the situation where it's the deepest, darkest, saddest situation imaginable. And Benigni is hilarious. And it's for his son. And it's so touching, but it is funny, too.
Great. Now we're going to Sam Bowers over here. You picked, do you want to tell, I feel like you should tell us what it is. I feel like I blew it with Dan. What did you pick for your first, for 2016?
You blew it with Dan. That was horrible. So my selection, one of my favorite episodes of last year, was our episode with Nora Dunn, former Saturday Night Live cast member, which we recorded right behind us here, actually.
Right, and kind of it's in a living room kind of setting. It's got a little fireplace and then like a couch there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we sat down. Oh, she brought her dog too. Remember that?
Yeah.
Her dog sat there, and I was terrified the dog was going to bark and be like a nuisance the whole time. And it sat perfectly still for like an hour and a half there on the couch.
And you said to me, which I found interesting, you were a big Nora Dunn fan, but the first cast of Saturday Night Live was actually later than Nora Dunn. So how did you know about her?
So I had known about Nora from her sort of infamous incident at Saturday Night Live, where she sort of boycotted the show, refused to perform when they had Andrew Dice Clay on as a guest. And I remember finding that to be the most fascinating story. And I remember learning about it from various teachers when I was at Second City and whatnot. And then when I actually dove through the tome that is Live from New York, the anthology of Saturday Night Live, I read the book. Which is the book written by all former cast members and people who have worked at SNL. And I just read all about like these intimate details. And I remember like, John Lovitz had some really nasty things to say about Nora, sort of like standing up for women's rights and her whole reasoning behind not performing that week. So I was just fascinated with that whole story and that whole side of her career. But I mean, she was on SNL in like the late 80s, and I wasn't born until 1992. So like my first cast that I started watching on SNL was like 2006, 2007, Kristen Wiig, Bill Hader, Andy Samberg, Fred Armisen, like those people. So it was definitely an interesting reason for me to be interested in Nora Dunn specifically.
So why did you pick this episode?
So I, like most people, I would imagine in the comedy industry, have had a weird fascination with Saturday Night Live. And that I first remember watching like Celebrity Jeopardy on YouTube in like 2005. And just thinking it was the funniest thing in the world. And from then on being like, well, I've got to get on SNL. And so meeting Nora Dunn, she was the first person, she's the first cast member I've ever like met. I think she's the first cast member I've ever even like seen in person. So not only like getting to see her and share the same space, but like shake her hand and sit down and like be a part of the intimate experience of recording that episode with her was a huge milestone for me and like just sort of my appreciation of comedy and my growth like in this industry of like, wow, this is a person who did it. She climbed the mountain. She got hired by Saturday Night Live. She worked there for years. She did a lot of great work. She knows Lorne Michaels, all that stuff. And then also just realizing like, of course, she's just a person. Like, she's just a woman who's sitting here on the couch, and she's very talented and funny, but she's no different than I am in terms of we're just people breathing air and sitting here in the same room.
How long did it take you to get over the starstruck of Nora Dunn?
I remember I think I fumbled a pretty awkward handshake, like, at first, and then also when she left. But then I was also like, I also had to record the show. So I'm sitting there like, don't screw this up. Make sure it's all plugged in, sound check, all this stuff. So like, because I was able to be like in work direct mode, that made it a little easier. That always makes it a little easier.
It's like when you do an improv scene, you have object work and you're focused on the object work. You're out of your head.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So tell us about the clip that you decided to share with us.
So I selected a clip. One of my favorite parts was we got to talk to Nora about what it was like being at the 40th anniversary, SNL 40th, which I think is every SNL fan's just like dream, is to like to have been in that room with every single person that was ever there. And so getting to hear her tell like these stories of like, I remember she said she was standing there like in this crowd of people and Paul McCartney, she talks about it, is like on stage, like singing to her.
Let's let her tell.
Yeah, please,
tell
please.
It. Here it is. Did you have feelings about going back?
I was looking forward to it, actually, okay. Which was really nice because I got to see everybody, and it truly, truly was one of the best evenings of my life. I mean, seeing everybody that I had worked with after all these years and getting that sense of how bonded we were. But we had lost Jan and we had lost Phil. It's huge, huge, it's hard to wrap your psyche around that, you know, but we went through a lot together. And then the host, you know, Paul McCartney, we wanted to dance where he started dancing with us. I went with my friend Peach, who's a designer, and he got up on stage and he sang right to us.
What did he sing?
She was just 17.
She was just 17,
yes.
Right? Oh
yes,
my
and
God.
And we met and talked to everybody. And so, you know, we went back to our room at 4 o'clock and we go, is it 4 o'clock? We got to get up in 20 minutes. We're old bags. What are we thinking? We go, well, let's put our makeup on and our clothes and we lay down for 15 minutes. Then we go downstairs and get in our taxi. I have no memory of the plane ride. It's just we got home, her husband picked us up at the airport, and we were like, oh, and he goes, how was it? We go, well, right now we can't talk about it. I gotta get some sleep.
Great, now it's my turn, and my selection is Cecily Strong from Saturday Night Live. And as you know, anybody, this was one of those interviews, and there's been several this year that, like, I've tried really hard to get, like, emailed them, got people, you know, like, track people down to get their email or gone on Facebook. Yeah. And with Cecily, a couple years ago, 2 or 3 years ago, I was trying to get her. And so I contacted her on Facebook. And I'll tell you something. She was really sweet, and she'd always get back to me. And so she had a couple movies out. And Lauren, my wife, who's usually on the Year in Review episode,
yeah.
And she's not because we had a baby, and it's, you know, it's been
crazy. A wonderful thing.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I'm glad you think so.
Congratulations,
thank you.
Jimmy.
She is cute. So she said, you know... She's pushing me, and she said, well, Cecily's doing some movies, and anytime someone does a movie, you have a little more access to them. So I think I contacted her, and she got back to me, and she said she would do it. And we were going, and this was hard too, because my dad had just died. So I'd gone through that whole thing, and then it was a phone interview. And we got to talk about therapy. And you guys know, anytime I get to talk about therapy
yeah.
with a guest, I just love it. And here it is.
It's almost therapeutic for you.
It is therapeutic for me. And it's right. also validation. Like, I'm not the only, you know,
for sure.
one doing
yeah.
therapy. And here's Cecily talking about, and I was scared to ask her this, to go there, talking about therapy. How has therapy helped you become... successful and also helped you become a better performer?
I think it just makes me a better person. It's let me, I think I can't do much if I'm depressed. You know, I don't think anybody's at their best when they're depressed, and I don't work well in that. I think, you know, for me, what I do is I do best from a place of joy. And in order to, you know, access joy, I can't be holding on to, you know, grief and anger and self-doubt and loathing. And so therapy helps me kind of get those things out. And especially, you know, we have a job where we are constantly judged, and we put ourselves out there to be judged. And, you know, the way we look and the way we talk and the way we think and our ideas. So... what's been really helpful with therapy, like my favorite thing that my therapist has said is, you know, that these things in my head that I may think about myself, that they're just thoughts, they're not facts, you know, and that has always been really nice. And, you know, she's like, so we'll just work on, you know, like just taking some of them out, just like throwing some of them out of your head, you know, some of the worst ones.
And how do you take them out? Just metaphorically?
Yeah, exactly.
This is for me.
Yeah.
This is for me. Not for the listeners. This is for me.
Liked that it was just like, you know, just to remember that it's like, that's not a fact. That's not an objective fact that you're an idiot, that you're bad at this, that you're not as good at this, that you'll never be this. You know, I just really needed to hear that. I need to remind myself of that sometimes.
All right. Now we're up to you, Dan. Your second pick. And I'm not going to tell you who the pick is because, like I said, I blew it the first time. So I'm making my amends now to the audience and you. So who did you pick for your favorite episode of 2016?
My second pick was I picked Jon Favreau. And there's kind of going to be a theme here because, like, filmmakers/comedians are something that I – getting to hear what they actually have to say or something that I can – that I'll kind of relate to and kind of, you know, see. And – yeah, I picked that episode. I thought was really cool.
And you said that you loved the two favorite movies that Jon Favreau directed.
Yeah.
I was surprised Swingers wasn't on the list,
yeah.
which was his first film.
Yeah.
But you had Elf and Chef, which I can't think of two polar opposite
yeah.
movies.
Well,
what was it about that?
Well, that's the thing is, like, I haven't seen... So, like, for me, Jon Favreau was just initially... someone who was like, you know, in Iron Man, he was the second hand man or whatever, you know, and
Second Hand Manny.
He was, what was the character's name in Iron Man? He was, he's like Tony Stark's like gopher kind of guy.
He was the chauffeur, I think, wasn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah, something like that. He's like in the, I guess in the comics, he's a bigger thing. Anyway, and I found out he directed that. So I haven't really, I didn't realize that, you know, he started directing films and there hasn't been a ton that I've seen of his. Like I haven't, I didn't know that Swingers was his first, I didn't see Swingers. So I'd like
you
to go see,
check it out.
Yeah, I'd like to go see it because it'd be interesting to see, you know, that. But I remember initially watching Elf and loving it, and just how that's a as crazy and out there as that kind of Christmas film is. It's still about, like, if you go to the core of it, it's still about a guy trying to reconnect with his dad, regardless of everything else. And so like that kind of stuff. Is what I really like about his directing style, and even in Chef, like I had recently saw that, and it's still it's about this guy who just wants to make good food, you know, he doesn't necessarily care about the fame or anything, and so like these very human kind of connections and themes that he keeps in his film at the root of it are what I really love.
And tell
about
us about the clip because it relates to what
yeah.
You just
so
said.
Let's see if. It's about that. He talks about the process of about creating things behind the and he talks about how he puts humanity in his work, and just and it, you know, when you have these connections, the comedy, well, it's kind of like truth and comedy in a sense, you know, it'll just kind of happen. You don't have to force these jokes or anything like that. So that's kind of what he's talking
and here's
about.
That clip.
At the end of the day, you're going to a show to see comedy. Like, they want their laughs, but if you could be compelling, you were probably going to get laughs anyway. And I always liked the people. I think about Farley. He was hilarious, but he was so human in his performances, even when he played the broadest of characters. And I was lucky enough to be at Second City and watching him perform every night. And I think when you see his best stuff, you feel for him. You don't just laugh at him. You experience it through his eyes. And that's, you know, to me, that's what I respond to. But then I'm also a fan of movies, and those are the types of movies that I like. And I think that movies are ultimately a medium where you want to feel things as opposed to just react and be entertained by them. You want to be transported by them. And you don't always get to do that, but it's at least what you should aspire to. And I think Del was, it's so hard to separate Del from what I hear other people talk about Del, because I only spent so much time with him.
Right.
But then you hear Tina Fey talk about Del, or you hear McKay talk about, and so it kind of rounds out the experience of it, because he really spoke in bursts. It wasn't like you were getting a lecture about
right.
about this stuff. You kind of catch moments when he would give you flashes of insight, and other teachers who worked with him also. But there was always a sense that you want to do something. Let's put it this way. Truth, finding the truth of something was more important than finding the funny of something. And that seemed to be the key that unlocked a lot of doors. At the time, honestly, I'm just, you know, how do you teach me how to be funny? Teach me how to be a good performer. Teach me to be special.
But then there's also the part that teach me how to write a screenplay. When I saw Swingers, because when you were here, I just remember you as the improviser, and I was blown away because it was such a great script, and it was, again, it was a human experience. It was you, L.A., you yeah. dealing with a breakup.
Right.
How did you take that pain and then turn it into something great?
It was, you know, again, I think the improv training was a foundation in that you're always looking for what's the game in the scene. What's the game? What's the scene about? This is a scene, you know, leaving a message on the answering machine. This is, the game of that scene was, can I live out a whole relationship one-sided just with phone messages?
And I don't know if I shared this with you guys, but after the interview, I went alone, which I usually don't. I usually travel with an entourage.
Yeah.
You guys
yeah,
are
yeah,
part
yeah.
of it.
Mm-hmm.
And this time I just went to his hotel suite. And at the end, he gave me this coin. And I think I might have it in the drawer here. It was because he had directed The Jungle Book.
Yeah.
And the Disney company had given him it. And on the back of it, it was like a big, heavy coin, like in plastic. And it said, on the back, it said director. And when I left, he's like, here, I want you to have this. which I thought was really nice.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah, and he's always been really nice to me. You know, we started out at the I.O. Chicago here together, and I remember one time before interviewing him, and after the interview was done, no, it was the screening, the night of the screening, the next morning I was going to give him a, I was going to interview him. He had a limo, and he said, you know, can I give you a ride home? And I said, sure. And I got in the car. It was down at the AMC. What is that?
River East.
And I'm driving in the limo, and I'm living in Wrigleyville then. And it was like Southport and Roscoe. And I'm like, I'm embarrassed. You know, this guy probably lives in a mansion. So I said, you know what, John? You can just drop me off at the corner. And so the limo dropped me off at the corner. Enough about me. Let's get to Sam Bauer's second choice. His favorite. Of 2016, second favorite.
Let's also be clear: this is not a first favorite, second, yes, or third.
Yes,
favorite.
This isn't gold, silver, and bronze.
Impossible to rank. We couldn't. That way.
And for this sure. is just we're for sake of time, we're only choosing nine.
Exactly.
Because I think we could each come up with 20 each.
Mm-hmm. For sure. Mm-hmm.
So my next pick was the episode with my guys from Hello from the Magic Tavern, Arnie Chunton Usador. I am a huge nerd fan of this podcast. A comedy nerd friend of mine turned it on to me when they had just started it.
Like you said you had listened to like episode 4 or something.
Yeah, like very early on, someone had turned it on to me, and I was like, oh, I love what these guys are doing.
What did you love about it?
For anybody who knows the podcast, it's exceptionally high concept. The world that they've created and the scenario that is the show is not simple at all. It's very complicated. And they have somehow managed to take that complicated idea and just make it so simply funny. And that nuance that comes from the collective decades of experience that those guys have in improvisation is so impressive to me.
Which is interesting because, of course, in this episode, I got to improvise with them. And the concept is really, it's very complex. But really, when you improvise it with them, it's very, very simple.
Mm-hmm.
So tell us about the clip that you chose.
Most people, I would say, really love when the beginning of each episode of Hello from the Magic Tavern, when the characters introduce themselves, when there's Arnie, Chunt, and then Usador. And Usador is a wizard. I think they call him, like, they refer to him as kind of like shitty Gandalf. And his name is extremely long. He has like 30 names in his name, and every time he introduces himself, Usador says every single one of the names in Matt Young's huge, big, boisterous voice. So actually getting to like be in the room when they did these, and of course for this episode they did with us, they did like an alternate dimension version of the show.
Well, they did that because they did it because they're so, those fans are so rabid, right?
Everything's canon, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So they want to make sure that if we create something that it's protected.
Yeah. They did an episode, but it was altered so it would not affect the storyline of the regular show.
You said it better than I did.
And so they altered their names a little bit. And just hearing them do the intro I've heard over the podcast dozens and dozens of times and getting to watch them do it.
I've never seen you more excited about something than describing this clip.
So giddy. I'm such a nerd.
So here's that clip now.
Hello from the Magic Tavern, a weekly podcast from the magical land of Foom. I'm your host, Archie Niekamp, and I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, the shape-shifting Wolverine.
Oh, yeah, Daddy. Chump here.
Hey, Chump, how you doing, buddy?
Pretty good. I'm chomping at the bit.
Fantastic. And I'm also joined by my...
I am Usador, wizard of the 12th realm of Ephesius, master of light and shadow, manipulator of magical delights, devourer of chaos, champion of the great halls of Tarakas. The elves know me as Fiang Yalak. The dwarves know me as Zonin and Hoogstangjis. And I'm known in the northeast as Plasmanius Paystar. And that's it.
When you hear it now, does it bring back that excitement that you had when you heard it?
It does. I mean, like, I was in the booth. Normally, I sit in the back of the theater in the booth, the sound booth, there with the stage manager and our sound engineer. And I was, like, on my feet the whole time. I was, like, leaning up over the glass. I wanted to sit in the front row.
That was so interesting, too, because when we went and So I hadn't listened to the podcast ever. So I'm since caught up to the whole thing.
Okay.
And I even messaged them with a character idea. But, you know, they're busy and they have like Scott Adsit and Felicia Day.
They'll get to you by 2020.
But like, so like, I was like, okay, I get this. This is kind of funny. But had I, you know, been caught up like you were, I can imagine me being in a similar, you know, kind of, because they still do live shows in Chicago now and then. I want to go see one sometime because it's interesting to see that happen.
Great. So now we're on my third pick, and that is, and help me out.
Second pick.
Yes. Second pick.
Second pick. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What would I do without you guys? Honestly,
I mean,
you providing the whole structure.
We are improv nerd.
Yes, you are.
Me and Dan. Ian Gates.
Okay, what does that mean?
Shout out to Ian.
Ian Gates, my assistant director.
Yes, Ian Gates. Which I thought was interesting. He went from intern, and then I think I saw an email. All of a sudden, he was assistant director.
He deserves every title we could possibly
assistant go. Director or assistant to the director?
Assistant director. I made that clear. He is the assistant director, Ian Gates.
Okay, so mine is, and help me out, because you guys have been doing a great job of helping me out in this whole episode, is Rashida Olayiwola. Did I get it right?
I think that sounds
wow.
Right.
And you know what I loved about this? I love this was just an interview. She came here to the house, the studio, I should really say. Mm-hmm. Don't you think?
Yeah.
Call it the studio. You know, we're doing Theater of the Mind. She came to the studio, and she talked about being the only African American woman in an all white group. And I thought I pushed her. I felt a little. Of course, shame pushing her there, but I thought it was really important to hear her perspective on this because I really think that that's how we're going to be more compassionate about this and how we're going to be more sensitive and how we can learn from this. And I think she just did a great job of telling that experience about that. So here it is.
I dealt with racism.
From the cast members?
Not all of them.
Okay.
Just one in particular. He knows who he is. And I didn't come on your show to be negative. But I think that my voice is something that people out there who are going through these things need to hear. Like, I did deal with a cast member who was, I don't know if he was a bigot or racist or both.
And how would it come out?
I will never forget this. I was on stage for like our third show after the famous Second City Fire. And the suggestion was Scarf. And the rest of my cast members on House Girl, they are lovely people. They know who they are. I don't have to do no name drops or nothing like that. But I remember the suggestion being Scarf, and I stepped out, and the other guy stepped out, and he goes, "Get this angry black woman away from me." And I was just like, "What?" And I like, in that moment, I froze because it was either I was going to choke him out or I was hoping someone else would edit. And it didn't. It didn't happen. And so I had to play through that scene. And
so
then
you had
some,
to? So yeah, how did you play? How did you decide to play?
I was just like, I just remember standing there and then one of the other cast members kind of played it off. But I'll never forget after that, I asked him why. He said that because I'm not a mean person. You ask anybody, I'm not mean. I treat people how either I wanted to be treated or better. And he couldn't even, I don't know. And that was just one of the many incidences where it was just like, these are the things that we're encountering out here, you know? And it's like, this has to change.
All right. We're moving, aren't we?
We're so efficient.
We're so efficient.
Such a well-oiled machine.
Yeah. When were the days when we would just ramble and we didn't know what we were doing and there was no prep work to it?
Thanks to you, Dan.
Yeah.
Come on.
And sound engineer Mark Serletic. You too.
Everybody makes this so.
And Abby, our stage manager.
We love Abby, our stage manager.
Second City.
All right. So, your third pick. I got that right.
Yeah,
right? Your third pick.
My third pick for 2019.
Is, tell us.
Jane Lynch. I picked Jane Lynch because of just knowing all the stuff that she's been in, and like when we go to meet these people, this was a little more relaxed because it wasn't a press junket, so we didn't have to like rush. Just the atmosphere in the whole room was just very, I felt very comfortable being in that room with her, despite all the success she's had.
Can you describe what that room was like for all the listeners?
Like the inside of the room or the feeling of the room?
Inside of the room, aesthetically speaking.
It was about, I'll say about the size of this room. But it was like bright white walls, kind of minimalist kind of art around there. There was a series, like a square of kind of couches or seating, like or chairs kind of set up in the middle of all white in the middle of the room, only accents of color here or there, off to the side of it in the suite. There was like a little, we only described it as like a lunch nook kind of thing. It was like a bench. Was it white bench? I thought it was like wood. Like something like oak kind of like.
The way I remember it was the entire room was white, and then there was sun just like beaming through.
Natural light everywhere. If you check
and
out
when
the,
you say it was all white, I mean the furniture was white, the carpet was white, the walls were white, the art on the wall were white. It was all white.
Yeah, it was very.
It was the brightest room I've
It was very. I mean, it was the perfect room to shoot video. And like, if you see some of those videos on YouTube. It's she looks great, and like even like you like it just really worked well for.
It almost felt like a dream, didn't it? It was so white.
Well,
it really was. It really was a dream.
And she offered us cupcakes that you gave to her, and it was just a very, very comfortable, you know. Interview.
Tell us about the clip that.
So the clip. She talks about being in the moment and not having goals is what she said. She jokes about that, but that's the truth because. Because you have to keep an open mind to things. Because if you pigeonhole yourself into, you know, like I'm only going to do this type of video or I'm only going to do this, then you don't know what else is in front of you. And she mentions, you know, that, you know, there's times when you just, like, I didn't know that I was going to be into like podcasting or any audio stuff, but here I am, you know, doing all of this. So like you being open to learning and adapt to new things, I think is.
Here's that clip.
Don't put the cart before the horse. Don't be deciding what you want to do, what kind of an artist you want to be. I want to be the next, Chris Farley, or I want to be the next Kristen Wiig. Let all that stuff go. Have your own journey. Don't decide where you should be in 10 years or 5 years or even 15 minutes. Just stay in the moment, which is the best improv in the world. The thing about improv is that you really can't go, you can't go up there with any kind of agenda. You can maybe have a first line of dialogue in your mind. Oh, I got an idea. But then you got to be prepared to throw that all away if someone says, blah, 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 blah. Do you know what I mean? That's how life should be lived. You know, I know that a lot of you guys are professional improv people who go to like businesses and says, this is why improv is good for you, because it is. It's being in the moment and taking the input that you get in the moment and responding to it. You know, it's so like I said, don't have goals. I did a speech at Columbia this year. I said, don't have goals.
To Columbia College?
Yeah, I did their commencement, yes.
And you said, don't have goals.
You have no goals.
You never had goals?
Well, I thought I had to, so I would make some up. But I knew intuitively, don't have them.
Why?
Well, to have goals, then you've painted yourself in a corner, and you've decided how something's going to look. And what you could be doing is right there, and you look right past it. Because it doesn't fit your agenda. How many times have you accidentally found yourself in the right place?
A lot of times.
That's why I call my book Happy Accident. You accidentally find yourself in the right place, and there's no accident. You know what it means is that you sat and you were breathing and you're present and you went, oh.
But how do you stay open to that?
Because you just do. You know, there is, like I said, a lot of our stuff in life is just to get over ourselves. All those thoughts we have in our head and all those conflicting desires is just to let them play themselves out, but don't act on them. And what's right in front of you? You're right in front of me right now.
And Sam, you said something to me at the end. She was so generous with her time. She gave us way over an hour, which you don't expect.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And you said something to me about the last 15 minutes. Do you remember what you said?
For Jane Lynch?
For the Jane Lynch interview.
It was so rich. I I feel like one of the things that's cool about the show that we do is, you know, we talk about a lot of serious subjects with people. And I think initially there are some walls that people put up. And after we're in a room with someone for an hour, the walls start to come down. And it's not that they're divulging their innermost secrets or anything, but they just, you can see like this weight off of their shoulders and they relax and they're willing to talk about all sorts of stuff.
And when she said to me about the, you know, because one of my things is like, I would love to win an Emmy. That's going to that's going to complete me. That's going to be... make me happy. And when she said, you know what, I was like, what did she say? Something like she was disappointed about winning.
No, there
Emmy?
Was no, like, she kind of goes into the clip too. I don't know if it's in that clip, but she says, like, you know, that social conditioning wants her to be excited for
that's right.
The Emmy, but she's like, I never had a moment where I was like, oh my God, this, you know? Mm-hmm. And she said she never really hopes that she has that moment.
That's so right. She felt she should have been more excited and she wasn't.
Yeah, and that's what I thought was really interesting too. Especially that, you know, that, and like I think right that was towards the end of the interview, and it was really cool to see that. And that's kind of a theme a little bit too, because like depending on the people, because T.J. Miller was almost kind of the same way when you had him. He was like, I don't care about an Emmy or you know any of this stuff. So it's interesting to see that it's not, you know, that there are other things to do it for than awards.
I always say to myself, give me the T.J. Miller fame, give me the Jane Lynch success, and then I'd like to, then I can say, you know what, none of it matters.
For science. Let's make Jimmy famous for science.
Thank you, Sam. All right, let's move on to you. And this was a little different episode than we usually do. Your pick, number three.
Let's change perhaps the tone of the podcast here. One of my favorite episodes this year was our episode on sexual harassment and improv. This was an episode, I haven't been directing improv since it started, but this was certainly the most stressful episode that you and I have worked on together.
What made it so stressful?
Well, I think it was that both, like, you and I were very passionate about the subject matter.
Mm-hmm.
And we were passionate about the inappropriate sexual treatment of women and men, but mostly women here in the improv community at large. And when the news started to break sort of last winter that the sexual harassment issue was coming out, and we had, you know, Sharna Gate with her, the Facebook posting, all this stuff, I called you like immediately.
It was your idea.
Thank you. I called you immediately and I was like, hey, have you heard about this thing that's going on? It's a really big deal. Everybody's involved in this discussion. We have to talk about this. We have to do an episode about this.
What was my reaction? Probably like we do, and then I go into slow motion.
I had to push you a lot, but not for very long. Like you understood the gravity of the situation.
Right. I was terrified because the other thing is there was a lot of anger. I mean, you could feel it in the community. There was a lot of anger. There probably was sadness, too, and a lot of fear, you know, because things were changing.
Yeah, they were, and for the better. They had to change. The treatment of women in the Chicago improv community had reached a boiling point, and it broke. So I said, you know, Improv Nerd is, we're the encyclopedia of improvisation. We are the true study and look in the mainstream sort of a mainstream look at this art form for many people around the world. It's our responsibility to look at this. So we dove down a rabbit hole of trying to pull this episode together of, you know, there was a time when I wanted to have all the heads of the different training centers in one room in front of a live audience, and I wanted like a firing squad. I was like, let's get 500 audience members in there firing off the questions for Second City Training Center in Iowa and Illinois and all these places. And then we had to go back and forth, and we had to discuss about the guests that we wanted. And, you know, we talked about it in the issue of talking about sexual harassment. What voices do we need to have in the room?
Right.
Obviously, we have you as the sort of facilitator and the person who's leading the discussion.
A white male, older white male.
Yeah, it is an older white man.
So that was, I had a lot of fear about that. Like, I felt like I was going to go in and be, you know.
And then we're like, all right, so we need to talk to women. But it's like, all right, how do you represent women? Like in a podcast. So then Julia Weiss had been a very outspoken critic of the way things had been in Chicago. And I said, she is a voice that we need to have in the room. Then we also had Ben Caprero was in the room.
Who had originally produced this, but was also, he had experience in, he was a lawyer, but had also, he did help me out here. He did.
It's like human resources training for businesses specifically around sexual.
Right. So he knew he was coming from that angle. Mm-hmm. And Julia really helped us. Julia Weiss did a great job because she had said, and this is where I think that it's helpful that people can learn in this situation, because she said, we need a woman of color to be there. Mm-hmm. I didn't even see that. That's, you know, I didn't see that.
Yeah.
And you're shaking your head too.
I think you and I were like, well, it's just women, right? Like,
right.
If we've got Julia, then that's the woman.
Right.
And she was like, oh my God, you guys, this is, you don't get it.
Right.
This is such a layered issue.
Right.
We need to have a diverse voice in the room.
Right. So I just want to say that we were in a position that we started to learn and our scope got bigger. Yeah. And then I brought in Nadia because I wanted somebody to bring kind of the psychological and the bigger, what's going on in the community.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a very ambitious episode.
Ambitious. And then, of course, we can't forget Susan Messing was there as a veteran woman. We want to have her. And she had just done an episode about the same subject matter on Dave Rozowski's podcast.
Right.
And so, like, she was already, like, in this sort of zeitgeist talking about it. And, yeah, it was. I think it was a very important episode. I thought perhaps maybe, speaking for myself, a little too ambitious, and that I was like, as the director of Improv Nerd, it's my job to go out and fix the problem. Like, I've got the power and I can solve this. Sort of this, like, straight white affluent man hero complex.
Typical man.
Exactly. And then by the end of it, I remember we finished that episode and you and I, we drove downtown together.
Oh God, we were both drained.
We were completely gassed.
I mean, you know, it was...
And I think I remember we were like, we tried so hard and we did all this, and maybe the conversation in certain areas didn't go the way we wanted it to. And we sort of just settled upon, like, maybe we just needed to listen. Maybe we just needed to sit in the room and listen to these people talk about the problem and not go, this is how we fix it, but provide a platform, which is the Improv Nerd podcast in our reach, for this conversation to go. And as you said, it wasn't the beginning of the conversation. It wasn't the end of the conversation. It was just a chapter in the conversation.
Great. So tell us about the clip.
So whenever I talk about the sexual harassment in the Chicago improv community with people who are either not improvisers or live outside of Chicago, the biggest question I get asked is, okay, there's sexual harassment and assault going on, but what does that look like? How does that manifest itself? Is it men just groping women, like, in the middle? Like, what is it? Nobody really knows.
Because people were just throwing, they were saying it's sexual harassment, and nobody was neither naming names mm-hmm. or saying what specifically was happening.
Mm-hmm. So then I thought Julia Weiss did a great job of sort of explaining, to some degree, what was actually going on.
Here's that clip.
It's, you know, the emails taking, like, a really close interest in their work, which when you're a young improviser and a teacher takes this vested interest in you, it feels good and they know exactly what they're doing. And then that interest in your work turns into, stay for a drink after this show. I'd really love to pick your brain. And then that turns into, like, late night texts and it's scary and you don't know what to do. These guys like to throw around their ability to invite you to auditions, really make you feel special by saying, you know, we have these auditions coming up, they're full, but I can get you in. They make you feel special, and they manipulate the fact that you're feeling good about your work to then later pounce. And it's so disgustingly common. I mean, I've heard stories about members of the Herald Commission drunk at IO holiday party, not letting a girl leave because they want to dance with her, and throwing out as a joke, oh, you can't leave, I'm on the Herald Commission. But then that being like, that feels real to the woman who's hearing it.
And for people who don't know the Herald Commission, they're the people at the IO who make the decision mm-hmm. Who gets on a team and who gets off a team.
Yeah.
So that would be considered an authority position.
Yeah.
And really, Julia did what Rashida, I hope I got it right, did in the clip that I had set up, shared the experience from her point of view that as white males, we can't see.
Mm-hmm. 100%. Yeah, I was very grateful for her doing that, and I think her presence and willingness to be a part of that conversation made it infinitely better and more impactful. I mean, I know like my concern was that we would do this whole episode and then like it wouldn't move the needle. It wouldn't have an impact. And then I remember I went, over that last year, I've been to other, improv places other outside of Chicago. And I have had women come up to me and thank me for like doing that episode. And it makes me feel better. Like maybe we did give a voice to people in these smaller communities that didn't have one.
It's funny because in retrospect, I wasn't brave enough to do it in front of a live audience. But I was really proud of that episode months later, mm-hmm. Maybe because it was so intense. Because I think we're almost minimizing. We had to change locations. We had to, can we get this guest? And okay, this person. And there was a lot of juggling going on. Mm-hmm. And, if it's hard, I want to quit. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad that you were there, the one thing about Sam is you have so much passion, and when you're like have passion, I just sometimes just coast off that because you're like, we're gonna do this. I move slow, that, but I just wanted to let you know that the episode that I picked for my third choice was Scott Acid, and this was one that was our 5-year anniversary show, and we did it at the Chicago Podcast Festival and the huge. Athenaeum Theater, which was like 1,000 people or 800 people.
The longest continuously operating theater outside of the Loop in Chicago.
Really?
As I was told by one of the stagehands.
That's good to know. Scott and I had a history because we had done improv starting out at Columbia College in 1983, 84, somewhere in there, with the legendary Martin DeMott, who was this great teacher. And I talk about this, it's not in this clip, but I was jealous of Scott. Scott was always like really the cool guy. He was a great actor, great improviser even back then. And every scene he did, he was really great. I mean, it always worked. And so I totally forgot this. I totally forgot that Martin called me, I think the log or a log of improv or something like that. And usually my job is to get the guests to reveal something they had forgotten. And here Scott is telling the story that I totally forgot about me being a log in improv, but also giving me a compliment, which I didn't know how to take. Here it is.
I will say this about you, though.
Okay.
I remember Marty, the most generous.
Oh, loving.
Loving, positive. Everything's got to be positive, right, man. About halfway through the semester, he described you as a log on stage.
And he was absolutely right. I was...
Yeah, go ahead. Because I know you to have... You're like the greatest improvement story I've ever seen.
Can you tell me that? Because... Could you tell me... Could you...
Yeah, you were much heavier then. I think that right. was holding you back a little bit.
Right.
And you were... What?
Like 268 pounds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I would have guessed.
Right. And,
but you were shy and you didn't trust your own decisions and your creativity, I think. And you were up there with an energy of, I'm not supposed to be here. And then you stuck with it. And you just got better and better. And then, it kind of culminated for me. I saw a show you did with Stephanie Weir called Naked. And it was just a two-person, hour-long, was it?
It was an hour-long one scene.
I'd never seen anything like that, and it was the best improvising I'd ever seen in my life.
Yeah, and Scott also, and we don't have that clip, or I didn't select that clip, but that story that he tells about, and this is kind of our theme, Paul McCartney, was just amazing. When he was on 30 Rock and he... got to meet his idol. Paul McCartney.
I've told people that story. Like,
and has it been as long as is like was it like a 10-minute story or
yeah,
something like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, yeah.
I loved the fact that there's two things. One, that his mom was in that story, but then she wasn't there in the beginning of the podcast. And then like he's like, Mom, are you here? And like she didn't say anything. And then like midway through that story, he's like, Mom, are you here? And then she like ended up being there, and I thought that was a pretty...
His own mother was late for the show.
Yeah, it was pretty funny. I also, another moment where I hadn't seen any 30 Rock yet. It's always been on my list of things I have to watch, mm-hmm. and now I'm starting to... I'm already through 2 seasons, and it's like, oh yeah, this is a great show.
I'm glad that this podcast is exposing you to Magic Tavern.
Well,
it's
just really opening Rock. Dan's mind.
Well, it's just, there's a lot of stuff out there, and
have you seen all the Star Wars yet?
All of Star Wars? Yeah.
Okay, great. Because Carrie Fisher's going to be our guest next week.
So, what?
Yeah, I'm kidding.
Oh, man. You know she has a dog named Gary?
No, I didn't.
Gary Fisher?
Yeah. And like she has to go everywhere with it. She's on the Colbert. She's on the Colbert show, and had to bring in the dog.
Whatever gets you.
All right, so we got to wrap this up, but and usually our segment, I think, for the last couple of years has been Lauren, and it was our star fucker. But we're doing something new this year.
Let the record show that just
yes,
happened.
It's very important. Very important because their listeners have been. They'd be looking forward to this, just mm-hmm. like getting up at Christmas and getting some presents under the tree. Mm-hmm. So we're going to try something different. Your favorite Jimmy moment of 2016, and you're laughing already, so I'm curious what it is.
Well, man, I don't know if I necessarily have. How could I pick one?
Right. No, there are so many.
Yeah, I mean, I think overall for me, I just liked the process of you, I don't want to say dealing with, but like, you know, becoming a father, like you know, going through the different kind of stages of like, I'm going to be a dad, you know, just kind of seeing how you'd react. And I always, whenever I edit the podcast, I'll listen to the intros, you know, in the beginning and everything to make sure everything moves pretty quickly. And it's just interesting hearing, you know, how you vent in the meeting there about like, I'm excited about it. I don't know. And like, and then I had the baby, but man, this is a lot of work, you know, just kind of, I like that process.
So today, as you came to the studio,
yeah.
Theater of the Mind here, I was feeding Betsy,
yeah.
my daughter. Mm-hmm. She's 5 months, 2 weeks. Yeah. What was your reaction? You're like, oh my God, I actually see this baby that Jimmy's been talking about for the last.
Yeah, I mean, the first time, this is the second time I've met her.
Okay.
I think 2 months ago or so, she's 3 months. You know, she seems like, you know, it seemed pretty natural for you to be holding her, so it didn't look out of.
Do you see any joy?
Enjoy in you or her?
Yeah, both.
I think
she's too young, probably.
Yeah, I mean, she's. I think there was a noise that she wasn't liking at the time when I was there, and she wasn't too happy with that, but I think that I mean, you didn't look like it was bothering you. You know,
I'll try harder.
Let me be clear. I want to make it clear to everyone out there. I arrived at this studio this evening, and I looked at that baby in the face, straight on in the eyes.
Yeah,
that's Jimmy Crane's baby.
And then she cried.
Well, I didn't. That was never. That was yeah. That was never in doubt.
There was so much shame.
A great
in that baby's eyes
that
could only come from the loins of one great man.
Let's hope she does not get that. Let's just hope she does not get that shame.
She's going to get a lot from Lauren.
Let's hope she gets a lot from Lauren. Let's hope she gets her looks from Lauren, because it really freaks me out when people are like, she looks a lot like you.
If Betsy ended up growing up and then getting on SNL, how would you feel?
That's a great question, Dan.
You know what? I think... I think I'd be okay with it. I think I'd actually enjoy it. You know, it's interesting because if she was a boy, I think I would feel competitive, you know?
Mm.
So I that's my first reaction.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
But I am curious that I kind of stuttered a little. So maybe deep down.
Yeah. What does that mean?
We'll find out. Yeah.
I hope she gets her looks from Lauren and her ability to play two-person scenes from Jimmy Crane.
Well, I'm sure he's going to be training her on that, you know, growing up.
Her ability to self-edit.
Growing up.
I already have a little bit that's going really well where I take her hand and I'll put it up like she's raising her hand and asking a question and go, yes, Betsy, you have a question? And then we do that.
It's good.
Yeah.
It's good, solid.
So bit. I'm
she's great at tag outs.
Yeah, she is great at tag outs.
Third beat tag runs.
Not so
are
good
killer.
With the object work because she can't.
Right.
Hold things and
motor skills. Yeah.
Yeah, and can't do the space in between the objects.
She's crawling through tables.
Sam,
yeah.
Let's get to your favorite Jimmy moment of 2016.
Jimmy and I are so close, and I get to work with him on such an intimate basis throughout this show. I have so many Jimmy moments. I will never forget going back to one of my favorite episodes from this year, the Magic Tavern episode, which was done live for the Chicago Improv Festival
yes, yes.
at the Second City in the Blackout Cabaret. And there was a lot of logistical changes,
right.
to say the least, that were happening in that show.
Yeah.
I was told
by three or four different people that the amount of time we had on stage was changing three or four different times.
Right.
So there were a number of phone calls between me and Jimmy of like, hey, Jimmy, I just talked to so-and-so who's running the festival. They say we have 35 minutes. Another call, hey, Jimmy, I just talked to a different person running the festival. They say we have 15. I heard we have an hour. I heard we have 90 minutes.
I heard you're going first. Now you're going second.
Yeah, we're going second. The changes were off the charts. And that's sort of the way things go at festivals. There's so many chains of communication that things tend to get a little screwy. Jimmy arrives at the Second City.
And I'm pissed by now.
Jimmy is furious.
Yeah, right. I remember this now.
And,
yeah.
In that there was a lot of traffic, so Jimmy was late. And yeah, so he was nervous about being late. We had, it was Hello from the Magic Tavern. It was a very important episode to all of us, especially considering, like, with that, there are three guests.
This was our first show at Second City, too. We hadn't begun the run yet, have we?
I don't think. No, our first show was Tara and Rance, I think.
Right.
No.
No, this may have been at Second City before we started our regular.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah,
I understand. So Jimmy shows up just in a mood, and I go, "All right, Jimmy, here's the situation as I know it right now."
Right.
And then he was like, "Okay, got it." And then I turned around, and someone came to me and changed the rules again. And I went, "All right, hey Jimmy, things just changed." And that was the straw that broke Jimmy Camel Corain's back, and he blew a fuse in the theater with our whole production team standing around. Matt Young, Arnie Niekamp, and Adol Refai, our guests from Magic Tavern, sitting on stage. The Second City stage crew, the wait staff, and then the festival crew is in the room. And Jimmy just goes, "Stop everything! I need to talk to somebody in charge right now!" And it, like, the whole room went silent. And it cleared everything up. And through that bold leadership style, we were able to nail down the exact structure and format of what we were doing that night, and then everything was fine. But just sitting there and watching Jimmy lose it.
I got to say that, like, if there's one thing, and it probably stresses you out, Sam, to no end, is that no matter what show we have, no matter how much time that we say, if it's 40 minutes, you'll get exactly 40 minutes. Like that Chicago Podcast Festival.
Jimmy has never gone short.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll say that.
Yeah.
And so I sit in booths a lot with stage managers who are like, "Hey, it's past time." And I'm like, "What do you want me to do?" I'm not on stage. I'm not in Jimmy's ear. So yeah.
But it's that kind of, you push the envelope, but you get a good episode, and it's
with that podcast.
What happened? Festival. No one got mad, and still, it was good.
I also had, if I may add another favorite moment from the year. This was recently at another podcast festival, or another festival, the Chicago Podcast Festival, at the Athenaeum, where we had Scott Adsit. This was a very cool event because, the Athenaeum Theater was amazing and historic, and we got to be on stage with Scott Adsit, who's this guy I looked up to for a long time. But we were triple billed that night. We were one of three shows that were on in that time slot. Yeah. The other one, Kevin McDonald from Kids in the Hall, was there. So
he was the headliner.
Yeah, he was the headliner. So he was like running around backstage and was like, "Oh my God, that's Kevin McDonald!"
Right. I walked into a room and Bob Saget was just kind of.
So this is what
there.
I'm getting to. Okay. So we finish the show, and we're down. We were second of three.
Right.
So we finished and the show was still going on. So we all went back down to the green room and got our backpacks and everything like that. And they had a room with craft services in it. There was some food and drinks and whatever. So me and my assistant director, Ian Gates, were like, "Hey, let's go grab a couple candy bars, for the road." So he and I were talking about the show, and we walk into this room, and I grab a couple things, and we're talking. We walk out of the room, and Ian grabs me by the arm, and he goes like, "Oh my God, did you see that?" And I was like, "No, what are you talking about?" He was like, "You idiot, Bob Saget's in there."
Yeah. It's like, that happened to me too. Yeah.
The Bob Saget is sitting in that room over there. So I was like, "Oh my God." And he was like, "Let's go back and get some more candy, you idiot." And I was like, "Okay." So Ian and I walk back in there, grab some stuff, that's Bob Saget sitting right there, just like on his phone, wearing his Converse. So then we walked out and we're like, "That's so cool. What a fun perk of doing this job. Bob Saget sitting right there." So then I walk into our green room, our dressing room. And I just sort of casually, I'm like, "Hey,
Jimmy, you want to try to do a quick sit-down interview with
now,
Bob
did you,
Saget?
Did you mean that sincerely, or did you...
It was sort of like I was saying it in a casual tone, and I was putting the ball in your court.
Okay.
And if you were going to take the lead on producing something, I was going to follow you into that that battle. But I was like, you want to do a quick like sit-down improv nerd with Bob Saget? And Jimmy's like, oh, what are you talking about? And I was like, Bob Saget is across the hall from us, right, sitting by himself. And Jimmy was like, okay, let's go. And Jimmy got up, and I was like, oh, we're actually doing it. And he walked into the hall, and Bob Saget had left that room, and he was walking in the hallway. And Jimmy just walked up to Bob Saget, never met him before a day in your life, and you just tapped and you went, hi, Bob, my name is Jimmy Corain. You knew you had
I know, I have a Todd Logan, a friend, mutual friend.
Yeah, you had some connection. You were like, hey, Bob, my name is Jimmy Corain. I know Todd Logan. And Bob Saget goes, oh, Todd Logan. Yeah, I know Todd Logan. Hi, nice to meet you, Jimmy. And Jimmy, the smoothest sailing salesman, got out there and was just like pitching Bob Saget on doing an episode of the show. And at the end of the conversation, I never
mentioned a show to him because I was scared to death. Mm-hmm. And then I was also like, okay, let's kind of feel him out. Maybe, mm-hmm, you know, because he seemed very, I don't like to do that when people are performing that night.
Definitely.
But if, you know, he was up for it, but he seemed very like, you know, he was like in the like prep, I'm focusing on the show kind of thing. So I like to leave them alone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I thought he heard him say, oh, well, you know, I'm not in town for very long, but like, let me know. Like, I thought maybe I misheard or something.
No, but you know what? Let's keep it.
Let's start a rumor right now that Bob Saget is going to be a featured guest on this show.
Bob, if you're listening to this episode,
we're inviting you, Bob, to go down the show.
This is an open invitation. It's the secret. If you say it, it will become true.
Well, I want to thank you guys both so much for everything that you do for Improv Nerd. You are the infrastructure. You're the reason that you're, you know, as I say at the outro, you're hearing my voices right now. So I want to thank Dan Schiffmacher for being not only the producer, but also doing a wonderful job with those YouTube videos.
Oh, thank you. I'm trying to, I mean, we still have a bunch. I might have some free time in January to get some of those back up. The Scott Adsit one specifically, but we have a bunch from 2016 and even 2015 that I still got to get up there. I always surprise you with this at the end of every year that we've done this. What's one thing, one piece of advice that you would give improvisers starting out in improv?
Don't
today?
I always say the same thing?
He
I
has.
Don't know.
I'm curious to see if you're consistent. That's I what know I'm what saying. Your answer has been. How consistent is Jimmy Corain?
I would say probably what I've said every year, which is get outside help. Is that
yep.
it?
Yeah.
So don't depend on your improv team to be your psychiatrist or your therapist or whatever. If you need outside help, get outside help. That means getting in a 12-step program because you drink too much or you eat too much or you need a therapist or whatever or a life coach or any support or good friends outside of improv that can support you, do that. I wish I had done that because if you've listened to this podcast, you know how many opportunities that I've, and I will, I hope my rate of sabotaging is less, but opportunities that I have blown.
We're going to capitalize on those opportunities in 2017.
Yes, we hope to. And Sam Bowers, I want to thank you so much for being the director of Improv Nerd, not only the live show, but coordinating with the guests and you know, Ian and Mark and you know, Second City and Stage 773 when we were there earlier in the year. So I want to thank you so much for all your hard work.
Yeah, thank you. I would also love to thank everybody else on the team. So of course, Dan and Joe Pizanzio, who's running camera, and Joe Gallagher, who's running camera. Yeah, Mark Serletic has come on as our sound engineer and our sound mixer during the live shows, and we're very happy to have him on board. Ian Gates has just kicked ass as assistant director here this year. Jesse Kunath has always taken the pictures, taking the photos. She is so great and helps us pull that off. And Abby over at Second City,
right?
Is
and of course, our Jesse Swanson at Second City, mm-hmm, who's been our home for the second half of the year. And of course, Jill Valentine and Brian Posen and Brian Peterlin at Stage 773, which we were there for almost 5 years. So, and of course, we want to thank you for listening. And until next time, remember, walk, don't run.
Let's say Seinfeld was on an island and he was blowing Boris Karloff. What would that be like?
It might go something like this. Oh, Mr. Karloff, I loved you and Frankenstein, and I love giving you a blowjob. Why, Mr. Seinfeld, I love having you